The following takes place between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m.
Everybody, it is Friday. That's right. Yes, we are through yet another week. It is Friday. It is January the 7th, 2020. And this is FPC Radio Live, and we're so happy to have you guys here. As you can tell, I'm in a fantastic mood this morning, wide awake. Got about 9 hours of sleep last night, first time in about 27 years that has happened. So I'm a little off today. But it's a good thing. It's a good off. I'm refreshed. I'm ready to go, ready to rock and roll. So without further ado, I'm going to bring in my co-host. That's right. You know him as Mr. Rhode Island. Yes, that's right. Because I named him that. And as far as I know, it's starting to pick up steam. So sooner or later, they're going to have a rally down in Providence to celebrate. Yes, that's right. Mr. Rhode Island himself. His name is Mike DeBate. Mike, how are we doing today?
La, la, la. That's right. More steam, my friend. It is picking up steam here in Rhode Island. Yes, I'm actually getting... We're up to three people calling me Mr. Rhode Island now. You know, unfortunately, they're all family members, but you know, you get the idea. So, no, in all actuality, I commend my good friend and colleague on the other end of the microphone right now. He's toughing through it, but you know what? He's following doctor's orders. Dr. Vinny Boombots definitely saw him, and he's giving him his wisdom and counsel, so everything should be good, and we've got a good show for you today, so without further ado, buddy, let's kick it off.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't include my multiple other personalities in your three people that actually call you Mr. Rhode Island, because if you did, I mean, we could consider that maybe like closer to seven. You know, a good solid seven people calling you that. So
that is possibility. Yep, absolutely. You know, well, you know, this is not the Chiefs parade, though. We're not gonna count. You know, bodies that weren't exactly there. I should.
Oh, it's okay. You know, Mike. You got to get over it, my friend. Stop being petty. I'm never petty. Ever. Never. Never.
Never. I know. I'm working on it. I'm working on trying not to be petty. I'm trying to embrace, you know, the big red fan base down there. And, you know, it's not that they're, you know, they have the colors of communism. Nobody really understands that. Nobody cares about that. No, I shouldn't say that.
I'm
being very petty and very salty this morning.
I don't think so.
I don't know. One of those, join me. Maybe you can help solve the mystery.
Hey, I bet you if this was the 80s, we could get some people behind us. I guarantee you that.
Absolutely, yeah. You know what? If this were the 90s, early 90s, we could get Robert Stack to do a whole Unsolved Mysteries on it.
There we go. But unfortunately, it is not. It is 2020, and that was a very, very long time ago. I don't want to try to remember that, but the one thing it is not long ago, or not as long ago, is as long as the Toronto Maple Leafs have won the Stanley Cup. So I didn't get to mention that on the Big Bad Bruins podcast yesterday, and I'm disappointed. I did take a stab at the tape. Blah, 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 blah. Let me try over one more time. Reset. Okay, I said I got to take a. Oh, you know what? You know, I feel like this Del Boca.
I lost my train of thought.
No, it's like I feel like Frank Costanza trying to say Del Boca Vista right now. I just can't do it.
Del Boca Vista.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So that was my tribute to Frank Costanza right there. Let's not pretend like, you know, let's pretend like that wasn't me just flubbing every single word that I was trying to speak. And so Mike, please. Help me here. I'm losing my mind here. I've gotten way too much sleep last night, and I just don't know what to do with myself. So, all right, you know what? Okay, I know what we're going to do. We're going to jump into something that's near and dear to our friend Terrence Biggs' hearts, and that's New York Mets. We're going to talk about Mookie here in just a minute because, again, this situation is, you know, maybe I'm starting to get a little hopeful that maybe they're just going to put the kibosh on this deal altogether. I mean, they probably should, but we'll get to that in a minute. Another deal that kind of got the kibosh put on them was the Mets deal, which Steve Cohen was reportedly set to buy a large portion of the New York Mets, but apparently it has fallen through. So the hope of the Mets to kind of push out the Wilpons is going to be put on hold for a while. And I know Mets fans, you know, those that, you know, actually show their face in public are very disappointed. So, yeah, this to me, I titled this, "The Mets Are Just Going to Met." And that's kind of what they are. It's probably not a coincidence that they rhyme with Jets, and they kind of just, you know, do the same thing. Continually screw up anything that they have or have available to them. So I feel bad for our friend Terrence, because I know he's going to, you know, he's going to be pretty disappointed that this isn't going to go through.
Yeah, without any question. I know Mets fans are definitely disappointed in this. When word came down that Cullen was going to be the buyer, all of a sudden you have some optimism that the team is finally going to invest wise money into the infrastructure, into the team itself, but even into the background and the marketing and things of that nature that I think the Mets have really struggled with for a good long time under the Wilpon ownership. Right now, it hangs over the franchise with like that sort of Damocles type feel to it. You know it's going to drop, but now you're just hoping that the buyer and the new ownership group that's going to come in is going to be able to live up to that expectation. So, yeah, it's I do feel for the Mets. I think there's a synergy sometimes between Red Sox fans and Mets fans because we have a common enemy, even though 1986 they broke our hearts. But, you know, in any case, you know, you look at that and you say, well, you know what? It's always good when the Mets are in contention. There always seems to be that element of baseball that just has like a good feel to it in the National League. And I was hoping that did go through and that the team would be a big time rival and competitor to the New York Yankees in the New York market. But right now we're just going to have to play the waiting game and see who comes in. But it delays the process. And unfortunately, it does put a damper on the season, I think, for Mets fans especially. So I know they're going to do their due diligence to probably try to find another buyer and probably find one sooner rather than later. But this does delay it, and it does, again, it kind of casts a pall over that season. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, Cullen already had an 8% stake in the team that he bought in 2012, and this deal was supposedly supposed to bring him up to about an 80% ownership of this team that's, you know, valued in the billions of dollars. So again, this is something that's certainly disappointing for Mets fans who have had to live through the just never-ending misery that it is to be a fan of the Mets currently right now. So I'm sorry, Jerry, but hopefully the Mets, you know. Yeah, I'm talking to Jerry, my friend Jerry Seinfeld. You know, he doesn't know we're friends yet, but I know he listens.
Well, you know, if the Mets had just hired George Costanza as their lead scout, none of this would have happened. You know, he did his best. He drove the trophy around. He got Lou Gehrig's pants. Babe Ruth's uniform. No, that was Steinbrenner that wore Lou Gehrig's pants. He was worried about Big Stein flopping and twitching. But in any case, yes, thank you, Mr. Steinbrenner. Yes, that's exactly how he was feeling. Yep, Big Stein. Big Stein still wants an eggplant calzone, yeah. But that's another conversation for another day. But yeah, if the Mets had just hired Costanza, none of this would have happened. Everything would be good in Queens right now.
Oh, at the very least, hire Keith Hernandez, you know? Anything, you know, at this point. Keith Hernandez?
I despise him.
Yeah, well, actually...
Thank you, yes, Newman, yes. We share your feelings on that. No, we don't despise Keith Hernandez. No. We should.
I would imagine that Mets fans despise the Wilpons. But anyways, keeping it in the baseball world and keeping it with topics that start with the letter M, brought to you by... actually, I don't have any joke with that. That was a failed attempt that I just fell flat. You know, hey.
Well, you know, your co-host's first name begins with M. You could have probably thrown that in.
Oh yeah, well,
there, but, you know.
Yeah, actually.
Oh yeah.
In every.
Michael.
Yeah. Okay. I guess. It
yep. There we go. See
M.
that? That's yeah, it. Yeah. Yep. All right. Brought to you by the letter M. Yep. That's it.
Well, I could have used Mr. or Michael. So Mr. Rhode Island.
Well, yeah. Well, not only that, but when my $3 internet cuts out, you always have to, you know, holler at me to get me back in the in the room. So that's a good way to do it. Yep. See, there you go.
Well, anyways, that was my failed attempt at trying to make a joke that fell flat, and that's kind of my joke philosophy. I go for it, even if I don't have a punchline yet, because guess what? Sometimes it just comes to you, and sometimes you know what? You run into a wall and you just accept it. So
very true.
But anyways, I was trying to make the connection from the Mets to Mookie Betts, and Actually, that's kind of a rhyme. So there we go. Here I am at it again. Just uncontrollable. I just can't help myself. But look, we're in day two now since it was quote unquote announced that he was being dealt to the Los Angeles Dodgers with David Price in exchange for a pair of prospects, both of which now we have learned have come with some baggage, both injury baggage and, you know, some past decision-making baggage. And I, for one, am getting to the point now, and again, I realize this is probably very unrealistic, and I even said it, like, you know, privately. It's like, look, this deal is getting done no matter what, and it sucks because, you know what, they should take this opportunity that they have right now to realize, guess what, let's get the hell out of this and figure out another option, because maybe trading Mookie Betts wasn't the best option. So, like I said, I mentioned we have a relief pitcher with arm problems and outfielder with legal issues from the past and sketchy. Like, again, there's a story about partying with a girl that was underage. And again, why do you even want to entertain something like that? And it's great that, you know, great, not great, but it's funny that these things come out after the trade is announced. Like, how have you not done your due diligence? And how do you think that that's going to pass as something that's appropriate to make a trade? And on top of that, you're trading your franchise best player. So, you know, all these players are going to get scrutinized anyways. But to me, they just need to get the hell out of this trade and just say, you know what, our bad. Let's keep Mookie and let's call his bluff. If he really wanted to stay here, let's call his bluff and see if we can get a deal done.
You know, that's the one element of this that makes me believe that your scenario could come true. Like, I'm hearing a lot about the players that are involved, and all of a sudden you start to think about it and say, okay, well, maybe they'll swap out a different player with the legal problems, because obviously that's something that can be a very, very deep problem for a team. The injury concerns, yes, there are injury concerns. There's no question about it. But a lot of times those can be eradicated by maybe a sweetening of the deal or an adding in of another player or maybe paying less of David Price's salary, things of that nature. You can get around that. So I'm looking at it and I'm saying, realistically, this is not going to kill this deal. It may hold it up. They may have to do a little bit more, due diligence in terms of how they're going to structure it. But ultimately, I think Mookie's headed to Los Angeles and he's headed to the Dodgers, and that's how this is going to shake out. But the scenario that you outlined is something that I was thinking a lot about last night into this morning, preparing for today. And with both of those problems and the Red Sox seeing the backlash that a lot of the fan base has in trading away a guy like Mookie Betts, this actually could end up working to their advantage in a lot of ways. It could serve as a rallying cry for the fan. It could serve as a rallying cry for the team and say, you know, we got our second lease on life. We made a mistake. We're coming back and saying that, you know, we do want him in the fold. He said that he wanted to be here, but it wasn't within his control, and that's why he was jettisoned. I don't necessarily know if that's true, but we'll see if that is indeed the case. But maybe try to gear up for a run this year and kind of like a, you know, like a Jake Taylor rally speech from Major League, you know, like win the whole effing thing. I mean, this is what could polarize this team to kind of move forward and say, hey, did you see what they were going to do? They were ready to give up on this team. They were going to trade me. They were going to trade David. Now we're back in the fold. You know what? Let's show them what we can do. And that could serve as a motivating factor. So I'm not saying there's a good chance, Lloyd Christmas, but there is a chance that this falls through and does end up working to the Red Sox advantage in some strange cosmic way. So maybe that's just me being a fanboy and hoping for the best, but I think there's more legs to it than that, because there are a lot of questions surrounding both of these players. And right now, I mean, the flip side of this is it makes the Red Sox management look incompetent that they could not figure these things out beforehand. But I choose not to look at it that way. I'm choosing to look at it with a positive lens, and hopefully they'll learn something from this.
Let's be real. They kind of looked incompetent heading into this. So I don't think that changes much. So look, I asked the people out there and, you know, fans of the Red Sox, you know, why, you know, I don't care about the management team looking like dopes, you know, if they back out of this trade or go with public perception on this. Because, again, I think in this situation, public perception is actually very accurate. And you see, like you said, you've seen the outrage and the, I mean, you have your group of people that are, you can't, you know, the you can't pay player X, you know, this amount of money people, you know, and that's fair. And I get that because, again, you know, there is a line even in a league with no salary cap where you just can't. I mean, money doesn't literally grow on trees. I mean, for some of these teams, it sure seems so, especially when you can just sell a couple bricks and make up the money. But, you know, for the most part, you can't just willy-nilly just throw a bunch of money everywhere. In baseball, you have a little bit more flexibility, and the Red Sox are certainly one of the more flexible teams when it comes to that. So, you know, hopefully they look at this and realize, okay, maybe it's a mistake to trade your 27-year-old MVP homegrown player who is considered one of the best five players in baseball. Maybe that was a mistake. In situation, yes, you understand, like, okay, maybe we can't afford that, but we're not the Kansas City Royals. You know, I'm speaking as if I'm, you know, a Red Sox management. We're not the Kansas City Royals. We're not the Tampa Bay Rays. We're not the Miami Marlins, who, again, I mean, I'd expect this from the Marlins. I never expect them to give a superstar a second contract or extension. That just isn't how they do business. But the Red Sox are different. They're a big market team in a league that has zero salary cap. So, to me, it just... I didn't think it was a good decision to begin with, especially the return. I mean, if you could have gotten a better return out of this, maybe I'd warm to it a little bit more. But couple that with, like, again, the information that we've learned the last couple of days about the two prospects that they are supposedly getting. And it just, to me, it's like, just nix it. Just, you know, let's just move on. Let's pretend like this never happened and try to, like I said, call Mookie Betts bluff. He said to Jim Rice that he wanted to stay here. He wanted, you know, okay. If that's true, if you really mean that, let's make a deal right now. Let's come to an agreement. Let's not get to free agency. Because, again, if you believe what he says, that he wants to be here, then you also have to believe that these two things both can't be true. Either A, he really wants to stay here and be here forever, or B, he wants to test free agency. So what is it? One or the two. Call his bluff. Call off the deal. See what you got, because guess what? If you lose Mookie Betts in free agency, it's not like you're losing that much from what you got. So, you know, what's exactly the difference? Like, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, are you? I'd rather risk this last year with Mookie Betts and get nothing for him at the end of the year than get the two players that they reportedly got or are in discussion to get. That's my opinion. Yeah. Because at the end of the day,
exactly,
the only reason to do this is to save John Henry some money. And
right.
I have no interest in doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think the fan base does either. And I mean, it's not like you're a poverty-stricken franchise that absolutely needs the money. They need the flexibility. I mean, Henry can well afford this. I mean, he's not exactly hurting. I mean, there's no question about it. So it does. It sends the wrong message to your fan base. It sends the wrong message to the region that invests a lot of time, energy, and money into this team. So if this is a chance for you to wake up a little bit and realize that this was not the course of action to use, this was not the way to go, the deal is not done, there's still time to pull it back, I agree with you. Roll the dice, take your chances with 1 year of Mookie Betts, put the cards on the table, let him, call his bluff. I think you said it very well. You know, let him prove that he wanted to be here. If he doesn't want to be here and he wants to test free agency, then he's going to go out and test that. I mean, and what are you giving up? Two prospects that have a lot more risk than reward and a whole lot of questions about what their futures are going to look like. So, you know, it's not like you're losing out on a haul of a century in terms of young talent that has the ability to mold into something that's going to be special. You're talking two players, and you can't win a championship with only two players. You need more than that to mold around. So, yeah, I think this is a perfect time for the Sox to walk away. That being said, I still think this thing's getting done. Yeah. I don't know. I just do. I have.
Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Very good use of the
I was waiting for that one.
Yeah. Very good use of the soundbite. That was great. That was excellent. But seriously, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just the way this whole story has shaken out. Yep. I guarantee you a lot of people know a lot more than me on the subject. But again, like I said, just the way this is all played out, I just expect this to get done. So.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I have a little bit more maybe hope. You know, maybe that's the right word. Hope that this doesn't get done, but we'll see. And again, I have no faith in this Red Sox management, you know, ownership in particular. I'm not trying to.
That's why I still think it gets done.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Ultimately, that's why I still think it. I hope not. I really, really hope not. I hope you're right. I'm hoping beyond all hope that you're right. And I think there is a good chance. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know, I'm leaning more toward it getting done than not.
Well, the problem is people always put far too much value in getting nothing in return. And in some cases, I do believe that. And you kind of said it. There isn't a, you know, a marquee prospect coming aboard. You know, there isn't that one player that you're like, okay, I can see where the value can be. Maybe it doesn't work out, but I like what they're looking at here. And you just don't see it because, to me, again, you look at this move and it's the priority number one is the salary dump. And that never works out well for the team dumping salary, especially if that team is a team that can essentially come as close to anyone to printing their own money. So, again, you know, maybe.
Reason will prevail!
But I doubt it. Because, again, like you said, it's Red Sox ownership and I just have zero faith in them. So, but. We'll see. We're about to actually talk about another owner of another sport related business, and we're going to do that in just a minute. So hang in, folks. We're going to take a quick commercial break. If you're watching on Sportscaster, you're going to see a whole screen. Just hang tight. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll see you then. And welcome back, folks. Thank you for tuning in and hanging with us as we took a quick commercial break. We just finished up talking some baseball between the New York Mets, obviously their ownership deal falling through, and the potential of the Mookie Betts to Los Angeles Dodgers deal falling through. And, you know, again, we will continue to monitor that those situations as they play out over the course of this offseason and going into the season. We'll see what happens if both deals ultimately get done or if both get the stamp of disapproval. But we talked a lot about ownership, both of the Red Sox and the Mets. One thing we're about to talk about that's about to kick off tomorrow is the XFL 2.0. And we all know the owner of the XFL, and that is one Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Both, you know, a hero, I would say, and I'm going to speak for Mike here because I think he'll agree with me, a hero of both of ours. Is that correct, Mike?
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, how could you deny the greatness of Vincent Kennedy McMahon? You know, he took his competition by the throat and he squeezed it.
Go ahead, keep going. I bet you could have done a whole monologue over that 2 minutes.
I no chance in my competition. I know. Oh, WCW.
Go ahead, do it. Let it all out.
The XFL. All
right, I don't want you to have an aneurysm now. So, but yeah.
No,
so
please don't. No. Nobody needs that.
No. Not at all. But yeah, no. We obviously mentioned the XFL yesterday. We're excited. Look, I'm personally pretty excited to see what this is going to be because I was alive and very able to remember what the first XFL was, and it was. It quickly spiraled out of control. And if anyone, and again, this is, you know, going back to the first rumored mentions of this league returning, if anyone watched the XFL ESPN 30 for 30, I think it was the 30 for 30, correct? Is that the documentary that did the XFL thing, or am I?
Yes, it was. You know, okay, it was ESPN 30 for 30 on the XFL, yeah.
So anyways, and you know, you saw them talk about it and they kind of at the very end kind of give you that little teaser about, hey, maybe it could happen again. And lo and behold, a couple of years later, here we are. And watching that documentary was a very stark reminder of what the first version of this league turned into. And we've talked about it. We talked about it briefly before. I know we've talked about it a little bit off air just because, again, we're wrestling fans and Vince fans and obviously anything that he does, I'm going to be tuned in at least to start. And, you know, it quickly spiraled into a gimmick in terms of, you know, we're going to introduce far more of the wrestling element, the sports entertainment element into this whole deal where you had, you know, very provocative cheerleaders, which, again, I'm not going to complain about, and a lot of people won't. I mean, I'm sure some will, but, you know, it just kind of spoke to the product that they were trying to market and produce for people. They had, you know, very, you know, like I said, you're basically taking the Attitude Era of WWE and putting it on the football field. So you had that, you had, you bring in JR, who, again, to all his credit, the guy is a fantastic announcer, and I could listen to him announce anything, but based on what Vince wanted and what this league wanted, they wanted more of that entertainment aspect. You get into the locker rooms, all that stuff. I mean, and again, look, I'm not saying like all this stuff was bad. It was just their mentality, their overall big picture for this league was faulty. I mean, they looked at it more as an entertainment. I mean, it is entertainment, but more as sports entertainment and not actual NFL league or football league, spring league. And
yeah, very well said.
So I think, again, I apologize. I'm losing my voice a little bit. I'm very emotional about Vince. You know, anytime I talk about Vince, any Vince, Vince McMahon, Vince Wilfork. Actually, that's about the only two Vinces I know. Vincent Price. But, you know, I think I have a little bit, for a number of reasons, I have a little bit more faith in this version. First of all, despite the failure of the AAF, last year was not a product issue. It was a financial and ownership issue, and we talked about this yesterday. The right. XFL doesn't have that issue. They have a sturdy ownership. They have a cash flow. They have money. So, to me, right off the bat, that gives them a significant advantage over the AAF. And of course, I mean, look, there's a plenty of players that we saw make their mark in the NFL from the AAF, and we saw a good product on the field, and I think the XFL could replicate that. Now, at first, I remember when this first got announced, because we had two spring leagues coming out, and there was very distinct differences between the two, not only when they were going to launch, but strategy as to where they were going to play. The AAF took a more unique approach to it, where they targeted areas that were not necessarily catering to professional leagues, a la San Diego. They searched for markets that were void of professional football, and you know, I think at the initial onset of this whole back and forth between these two leagues, people thought that it was a good idea, and look, there was some value to it. You built a fan base around teams or areas that don't necessarily have a team to root for. The XFL, on the other hand, took a different approach, and they went for the established market because, it just seems like that was the strategy they wanted to take. And you know what? It secured them an ESPN deal, a Fox deal. I mean, they're going to have games on ABC. This is a pretty big opportunity for this league. Now, again, a lot of this has to do with World Wrestling Entertainment's deal with Fox. Obviously, these two businesses are not related. However, they are related in the sense that, you know, one hand washes the other. I mean, Vince has a deal with Fox. Well, guess what? We're going to get you some spring football, and we're going to put the product out on the field. So right off the bat, I think they're going to be far more available to people to watch. I think the AAF had some issues early on about, okay, how do we watch this game or where it's broadcasting? They had some good TV rights, but it was more of a, you're going to give us TV and we'll give you a product and we're not going to make any money off of it. Cause that's kind of what it was with the AAF. So it was, we're giving you, or we're taking the opportunity to get on air and we're not going to charge you for it. Essentially. I mean, there were some other deals that went along with it, but this is not the case for Vince. Vince has the money. They don't need to take a charity. They have a deal already with their main business, the WWE, whether you like it or not. I mean, it's a money-making machine, and it has been for a very long time. So I think that helps this XFL version. And again, look, it's all about the product on the field. So if the product sucks, then it's not going to work. But I think the AAF gave us a pretty good indication that there is potential that this league could work. And despite the prognosticators that are obviously going to be coming out right off the bat saying, no, this obviously can't work. Well, let's see. I'm personally pretty excited about it. We got two games tomorrow, two games on Sunday. It's going to be fun.
It will be. And I think, you know, it's a good alternative. I think that the market was ready for it. I think you made very good points when you came to the AAF. That wasn't a terrible product that was being put out on the field. You can make the argument that the product was actually pretty good. The football that we were watching was actually pretty good.
It really was.
the problem that they ran into was mismanagement. Money management was terrible. Business acumen was awful. And it was a little bit surprising considering a lot of the investors and the people they had involved, you know, people that had a lot of NFL experience that were very much adept at being able to, you know, help to right the ship. But unfortunately, at the end of the day, it's about funding, and the funding just was no longer there. With this version of the XFL, I think it may struggle for the first couple of weeks, and I actually don't believe it's going to come out of the gate as maybe as prolific or as strong as it did in its first incarnation. I think a lot of that was the wonderment factor of how are they going to do this? What are they going to do? And I think you also made some good points on the first incarnation of the NFL, the XFL. This was an opportunity for Vince to kind of flex his muscle, his WWE Attitude Era muscle, into the world of professional sports and professional football. And I think he thought that those two fan bases were very similar, that he could bring elements of what WWE had in sports entertainment and bring it into the scrum in the middle of the field, and you know, the no fair catch, and this is going to be smash mouth football, and we heard that catchphrase thrown around quite often. But I think in a lot of ways what the fan base did was said, well, if I want to watch WWE product, I'm just going to watch WWE. I'm not going to watch WWE on the football field. If I want to watch football, I'm going to watch the NFL. And I think in a lot of ways, he tried to take on the NFL in that regard and have an alternative type product and something that was different and new and edgy. And it just didn't work. This time around, they took a much more deliberate approach. And that's why I think this one has the opportunity to succeed. The reason why I say it might struggle at first is because I think a lot of people are going to be skeptical, and they're going to have that image of the former XFL the last time and say, yeah, you know what? I've seen this before. I've been there before. Same old stuff, not the NFL, not interested. I think the people that will, like you and I will be tuning in and a lot of others, will create that buzz. And I think once you see that the product on the field is going to be pretty well, maybe this league is being run a lot better, I think it has the chance. So if it doesn't come out like gangbusters right off the bat, folks, give it a couple of weeks, because I think the groundswell could help the XFL in the long run.
Yeah, and to your point, too, not only is the previous version of the XFL going to make some fans timid, but, you know, again, the AAF last year. Again, for those who watched and really enjoyed the league, I think you're going to see a lot of fans, you know, come over that were fans of the AAF. Because, again, there was a very strong group there. And we, as a site, fullpresscoverage.com, had the benefit of having a lot of really good AAF content, and again, we heard the passion in these podcasts, we saw the passion in the writing, we saw the passion from the fans, and they really loved it. And again, it wasn't so much they felt betrayed by the Carolina Hurricanes owner, and I'm just blanking on his name right now. Yeah, I know it. It was burned into my head for a while, and I'm just drawing a blank.
I know. I'm the same way. I'm trying to figure it out myself.
I think it's like Dondon or something. I don't know. Whatever. Something like that. But it's not really important, because the point of this is, you know, people were outraged at him for pulling the money. I mean, even though he was the one who kind of tried to save it to begin with, I mean, by putting money into it. And that right off the bat tells you that the AAF, despite the quality of product, it was going to be so tough to succeed, because if you don't have the financial backing, you're just not going to be able to do that. The XFL has it. So I think, you know, at the very least, they're going to get through at least one season. And I think if they build off the mistakes of the AAF, learn from those, learn that and realize that, look, there is a market for spring football. I know people keep saying, oh, who wants to watch spring football? Well, guess what? You may say that, and then all of a sudden you're going to tune in and be like, oh, wow, this is spring football, and it's actually very entertaining. I'm going to watch it because, hey, it's football, and we love it. There is going to be a market for it. It's, you know, again, this is not something that's going to blow up overnight, but the XFL certainly has some advantages that other leagues in the past haven't, and that's not only the financial and TV rights deals that they have, but it's also the opportunity to learn from previous mistakes. And, you know, I think, again, we can make jokes all we want. People can say what they want about Vince McMahon, the bravado, the ego, all that stuff. The guy's one hell of a businessman, and he knows how to make money.
Absolutely.
He knows how to build an empire. So if there's anyone I will trust to to do this right the second time, it's going to be him. And look, he's got some good people in charge this time. You know, it's not about the name. It's, you know, Oliver Luck, Andrew Luck's father, obviously. A lot of experience with the game of football, they've decided to, you know, do things such as, you know, they're catering to what people want. There's a large group of people. I'm not one of them. That want to change the NFL over time. And, you know, one of the things that they are doing is creating it more like a shootout in soccer, where it's a one-off, like you have to get into the end zone back and forth, which, again, I get the entertainment factor of it. I understand why they're trying to do it. And again, it's catering nicely to the group of fans that really want to see something else from overtime. And maybe they see it and they're like, you know what, I don't like this. Maybe the NFL has it right. Or maybe we all see it and we're like, you know what, this actually isn't so bad. I'm not, let's just put it this way. I'm going to have a hard time believing that. I'm very firmly for the current way the NFL does overtime. Another thing that they changed in kind of, you know, subtle changes but could be a huge impact on this game is changing the play clock from 40 seconds to 25. And, you know, we talk about, you know, maybe football's not in the forefront when it comes to length of sport and length of time watching. I think less people complain about their length of time because, again, football is king. But it always makes me laugh when they come out with graphics of actual football playing time compared to, like, commercials and time off. And it's funny that you get, like, 20 minutes of actual gameplay, you know, versus, like, the 3.5 hours you invest in watching this program. So, maybe it speeds up the game a little bit. Maybe, you know, the idea being there's going to be more offensive plays and people love offense. So I'm excited for this XFL. And you know what? I'll be parking my butt on the couch tomorrow and watching some just to see what we got.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of buzz around it and I'm interested. I know a lot of people are. You mentioned the market for spring football. I definitely think it's there. I think people are not ready to let go of the game yet. This gives you a nice alternative. And again, because the financial backing is there, I do expect them to make it through at least one season. And I can't see Vince allowing this to fail after one season, after the previous failure of the XFL. Yeah. It would be too blemishes on his record, and say what you will about the man's ego, it motivates him to be the best he possibly can be. I think this has a chance to have a little bit of legs. Is it ever going to rival the NFL? No. And I don't think he has the grandeur vision that he did before, or maybe even the false bravado that he did before, that this could rival the NFL. I don't think that's what this is all about. It's an alternative. It gives an extension to the season, and I think it could work. And, you know, given the right opportunities and the right players in place, I think this could be a good alternative. So give it a chance, folks. We're going to do that, and we'll be talking about it a little bit next week, I'm sure.
Hey, any chance we get to bring up Vince McMahon, I will take every opportunity to do so. So thank you, folks, for tuning in. It is time for us to go. It is just about 9 o'clock on the East Coast. That means we are about to sign off. So, folks, we've had a great week. Super Bowl was last weekend, so the NFL season is officially over, and we will be hitting Monday hard with another great episode of FPC Radio Live. So in the meantime, give us a follow on Twitter. I'm at IGLEN31. He is at MDABAT. FPC, and of course follow the show. It's at FPC Radio Live and at Full Press Radio. Guys, folks, if you're XFL fans, check out Full Press XFL as well. So have a great weekend, and we will see you on Monday.